at the bottom of Samach Aleph and Bet, we just left off at the machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, that we said by Amar Rabbi Elazar, Ribit Kutsutsa Yotza B'Dayanim, that when it comes to real upfront and total ribit that one charges, then it can be taken out by the Dayanim, you know, that we can enforce in Beis Din, take it out. Avak Ribit, which is basically Ribit Derabanan, Enu Yotza B'Dayanim, that's the position of Rabbi Elazar. Biofran's position is, Afil Ribit Kutuza Namayin Yotza B'Dayanim. On the other hand, that even full-fledged Ribit is not, you have recourse in court. The courts don't have jurisdiction over this matter, and they're unable to remove it from the Balei Adin. So we yesterday discussed Amravitzkak, my time with the Rabbi Yochanan. Today we discussed what was the position of Rabbi Yochanan. So we brought down Rabbi Yitzchak, who said from the pasuk in Yechezkel that the punishment for those that are neshech natan v'tavri lakach, v'chai lo yechiyah, that he won't live. So he says, l'mitan itan v'lo lehishavon, that basically the death penalty or death is the appropriate response or will be the outcome of someone who lands with ribit, but lehishavon is not returnable, meaning we can't force him to return such a money, and that his returning of it won't protect him necessarily. Avad Rav Amar Kra, the pasuk says, "Al tech tuach mito neshech v'tarbit v'yareit demelokecha." The morad nitan v'lo lishavon. Again, it's God's issue, not a Beis Din issue. Hashem takes care of it v'yareit demelokecha. And the last reason we saw was Rav Amar Mikufei Tekra, going back to the pasuk in Yechezkel. It says, "Mochimat damav bo yeh." So because it says "Mochimat damav bo yeh" at the end of that parsha, about that pasuk, at the end of that pasuk in Yechezkel, it's talking about interest. Therefore, ukshu milvei ribit l'shofchei damim. There's a hekesh between those that lend with ribit and those that kill. Mashofchei damim nu leishavon, just like someone who kills. In a sense, it's irreversible. Right? You can't take that back. Milvei ribit lo nid leishavon. Again, milvei ribit have the same issue, which is, first of all, we can't enforce it in court. And again, the returning of the ribit may not protect the individual from the punishment that should be awarded. Now, today, we're going to start with Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, my time with Rabbi Elazar. What's Rabbi Elazar's position? Rabbi Elazar differentiates between Ribit Ketzutza and Avak Ribit. Basically, between Ribit Doraita and Ribit Derabanan. She says that Ribit Doraita is extractable and Ribit Derabanan is not. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, my time with Rabbi Elazar. What's the position of Rabbi Elazar? Damakra. Bechei Achicha Imach. That's the end of the pasuk of Al Tikach Mito Neshech V'Tarbit in Vayikra. What does it mean, v'chei achicha imach? Ahadar lei kihechei denechei. Meaning that, return him to a position where he is right, comfortable with you, or that he can return to you. So that means that, how do you create him, or how do you make him into achicha again? It's by having him return the ribit, and making him like every other Jew at that point. So that's what Rabbi Elazar says. Rabbi Yochanan, hayav achai achicha imach, mayav bilei. So what is he going to do? What is Rabbi Yochanan do with v'chei achicha imach? So mivay lega letanyo, we have a brisa. Shnayim shayu mahalchim b'derech. Uviyad achad mehem kaiton shamayim. Two people are walking in the desert on a trip, and they have a flask of water with them. Im mishotim shnehem meitim. If they share the flask of water, they will both die. Mishata achad mehem megi liyishuv. If only one of them drinks the water, he will make it back alive, and the other one, of course, will perish. Dorosh ben Torah mutav shishtu shnehem v'yamutu v'al yirah echad mehem v'mitato shel chaviro. Better that they share the water and basically be in a shevi al taseh position where each one of them passively will die because the water will run out, then have one of them decide to, in a sense, kill the other. If you kill the other again, it's still shevi al taseh, he's not doing it actively, but the decision to consume the water will, for sure or for certain, cause the death of the individual. So Bar Petura says, don't make such a decision that will end up in the automatic death. You drink, and then you come to the inevitable conclusion, which is that there is no more water, and then they will both die. Achiba Rabbi Akiva, Billy made, until Rabbi Akiva came and taught, V'chei achicha imach. Chayecha kodmin v'chayei chavercha. So this is why it was brought down for Rabbi Akiva's limud, which is that he comes and says that when it says v'chayei achicha imach, that means with you, and this is the general principle, is chayecha kodmim l'chayei chavercha, that your life always come first, that you always have to take into consideration your life when it comes to doing mitzvot, when it comes to all sorts of interactions in the Torah. We do give, in general, precedence to one's own situation. It means one's own situation in Bigufo, and also one's own situation in Bimimono. We saw that in Baba Kama. The Gemara darshens that as well, that a person's own monetary standing and economic situation takes precedence. And we saw that that could have extreme implications, where if a person only looks out for themselves, then they never do tzedakah, they never do for others. So there, the Gemara says that if one only looks out for themselves, then they will also end up losing out. So one has to obviously strike that balance, which is looking out for oneself first, but also not to the extent or to the point where it's so selfish that they never look out for others. But here, which is the most extreme case, which is what Rabbi Akiva says, that when it comes to life and death, one must choose their own life over others' lives. It means that there's no mitzvah of tzedakah and chesed at the expense of one's own life. Right? There's only a mitzvah of tzedakah and chesed if that will somehow enable the other to live, but not cause you not to live.
What's, by drinking the water, you're causing the other person to die. So that would mean that you're not worried about that. But what would happen? One guy's holding the jug, and the other guy's not left to forcibly take it from him, right? Because now they're since it belongs to the other guy.
He would be stealing.
But since it's bikuach nefesh, would he be allowed to steal it?
No. We generally bikuach nefesh in terms of one taking the. Generally say by Yisurei HaTorah, which are Ben Adam HaKom, except for the three cardinal sins, you're allowed to violate them for Bikuach Nefesh. When it comes to other people's property, it's not so clear that Bikuach Nefesh is Docha, because we had the Gemara in Baba Kama by the Gdishim, by the David HaMelech, when he burnt the fields in order to save their lives when they had the Tamun. Are you allowed to, and the Gemara there explicitly asked the question, is one allowed to burn other people's fields in order to save their own life? Is one allowed to take someone else's property in order to save their lives? And generally, the Gemara's answer is no, that one is not allowed to expropriate other people's property to save their lives. So Pikuach Nefesh is not doche in terms of gezel, in terms of other people's property. That doesn't mean that it doesn't give permission to an ani to go and steal in order to survive. That's by the Melech. The Melech is allowed to do it because it's brought together. Right, but not generally, you can't do that.
I would think if there's a ketone of water, sitting in the middle of both of you, there's two people in the desert, and they find the ketone of water.
Right.
It's hefker.
It is hefker. There
so
they
can they kill each other for it?
I don't want to say kill. The Gemara talks about Rabbeinu Tam and Sanhedrin, and Ben Surumer talks about in Yered Vayavah, there's a difference between active and passive killing. And just like the Gemara distinguishes in Arayot of active and passive activity and passivity in Arayot, that activity is asur when it comes to these three cardinal sins, that is not true by passivity in Arayot. And that's my answer is that Esther karkal olam haita. That Esther was karkal olam, she was passive, and therefore it is muteret for her. It's one of the answers. There's another answer. But the Gemara, so Rabbeinu Tam applies that similarly to death. Also out there, but Torah Mer says that what happens if a person, they say to a person, listen, if you don't do such and such, we're going to tie you up and throw you on top of this baby. By throwing you on top of this baby, you're going to kill the baby. Or they say to him, listen, if you don't do this, go and kill it. You're going to have to kill this baby. Kill this person, or we're going to kill you. Or we're going to throw you on top of this baby, and we're going to kill you. Rabbeinu Tam says it's a difference. A case where they ask you to actively kill someone, you're not allowed to do it, and you have to be Eric Valiavo, you have to give up your life. A case where they tie you up and throw you on top of the baby, that will kill the baby if you don't do something or if you don't kill this individual. And say to you, let them throw you on top of the baby, because that is a passive killing of the under individual. So Tzvi, what you're suggesting over here about this hefker water, they kill each other for it, the answer is no, because they're not allowed to actively kill in order to save one's life. Over here, again, by Rabbi Akiva, the killing is done passively. It's done by Sheva Altas in the sense that you're drinking the water will inevitably cause the death of the other person, but it's not that you are actively killing the other person. That is not that's exactly the distinction in Yerak Vayavor, which is Shrichot Damim. That Shrichot Damim, active Shrichot Damim is not permitted, whereas passive Shrichot Damim is allowed in order to save one's life for very Pikuach Nefesh.
Akiva's Rabbi Akiva's point of machloket, his real chiddush is that someone needs to drink the water, right? But he wouldn't necessarily be forbidding you giving him the water.
Right? That's a good question, right? That's a good question. There are Rishonim who believe Akiva is a right. Is it the right? Is he just telling you you have a right to do such a thing, or he says there are Rishonim who believe you have an obligation to do that? Because there's a mitzvah of chayecha kodem, which means that you're obligated to take care of yourself and not do something that will cause your life, be at the expense of your life, which will present issues like where people give up their lives in order to save others. I mean, all right. Sorry, it's a great sugya. I wish I could have done all day on it. All right. Meitavei. Meniach lehem abiyam ha'od shel bibit. Apopish yodim shen shel bibit. Enan chayevim lachziran. So a person, a children of a known interest collector. So this interest collector, even though they know that the money that he earned and that his life savings is from charging interest, nevertheless, they do not have any obligation to return that money. Ha! What can you conclude from that? Avian chayavin lachazir. Right? So, that their father does have to give back the ribit. You know, we can either extract it in court, or we're going to obligate him to give it back, or he should give it back. The ribit. So the Gemara says no. Bedinu davun lami lo mechayev lehachzir. Their father also is not obligated to give it back. V'ader kabay lemitne seifa. The reason that they're talking about the children is because of the second half. Eniach lehem para utalit. Eniach lehem avim para utalit. Which they, again, we saw this in Baba Kama. The father leaves them davar mesuyam, right? Called davar mesuyam, something that is obviously the stolen object. It's identifiable and clearly the stolen object. Chayevim lehachzir mikne kvod avim. They have to return it because of the vote of their father in order to not have people say, oh, that's the parah that their father stole. That's the talit that the father stole. But monies, that's not the case. Monies are, as we've said before, dispensable in the sense that all money is exchangeable. And that isn't, there's nothing devar misuyam. It's not considered to be a particular piece of metal claim or particular object when it comes to monies. They're fungible. Whereas objects have a shame on them, and therefore a stolen object will have to be returned. Whereas monies that are quote-unquote stolen, that were taken inappropriately, will not have to be returned in this case. So, tani, nami, resha, bididhu. So, therefore, the resha spoke about the children, even though it would be true of the father. Bahani, mipnik, vodahem, mimichaybe. Right? Why would these children be obligated to give back this for their father? Karikan, right? Right? We, in general, have a principle that you only have to treat them with person with kavod, give kavod to the person, treat them in a certain manner, where say masay amcha, when they act appropriately as well. To be choshesh for the father's kavod, when he wasn't choshesh for his own kavod, right, seems to be strange. Kadamara Pinchas, which made the rabbi b'shasa tshuva. The father did tshuva. The father did tshuva, right, achanami b'asa tshuva, also our case of here, he did tshuva. Somebody says, he has a tshuva, may boy gabe. It was really about tshuva. What's he still doing with all this stuff? I mean, the fact that he still has it brings into question how big a or how good about tshuva this individual was. So shalom, he speak like Zira Shemit. He came around late in life and he wanted to rectify the situation, but he ends up dying before he's able to rectify the situation. Right. So then, in that case, we obligate the children to return it on his behalf. Again, the Mishnah distinguishes between cases where it's davar misuyam. Tells para talit where they will have to return it as monies of ribit, they would not have to return. They would not be obligated to return. It says meitavei hagazlanim umilvei ribit afal pi shigavu machzirin. So gazlanim, thieves, and umilvei, people lend with interest, even though they've already collected the interest machzirin, right, then they have to return it or they return it. It says gazlanim. My afopish gavu. What does it mean that they, even though they took it? Now the word gove means to collect. Right? Collect is an appropriate verb when it comes to talking about milvei ribit. Someone has taken interest and then he collected the interest. When you talk about a ganav or gazlan, when you talk about gavu, they're not collecting anything that they owed. They're taking, right, they're expropriating somebody else's property that doesn't belong to them. What does it have to do with gavu? So my afopish gavu, you go. E gazul gazul. If he stole it, then it's stolen. E lo gazul, right? Gazlin and karit lo. If he didn't steal it, then why is he called a gazlan? What does gazlan have to do with this picture of gavu? Ella How do you explain this? Mishnah Ema Gazlanin Mainin Hu, or what is a gazlan, or what type of gazlan we're talking about here? We're talking about a milve rebit. Afal pishu gavu machzirin. Even though they've taken it, you do have to return it. So now, first of all, milve rebit are classified as gazlanim. We saw that in yesterday's daf where the Gemara wanted to equate gezel ona and milve rebit, right? That they should all be in the same category of taking what doesn't belong to you. So that the fact that the Gemara compares that a milve rebit to a gazlan here is not surprising. The Gemara saying that now comes to a conclusion that milve rebit, al pishu gavu machzirin, even though they have collected the interest already, we will push them to return it, but they have to return it. They're obligated to return the rebit that they took. If not, we don't say what's done is done. We say that you have to return that rebit. So that will present the problem for Rabbi Yochanan. Because Rabbi Yochanan says that rebit is never subject to returning, meaning we're being forced to return or obligated to return it. So now we have a brisa which suggests that Afa Pisha Gavu Machzirin. Even though you collected it, you do have to return it. You're obligated to return it. So this would be a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. It says, Tanahi. And Yochanan meets a machokas Tanaim about whether one has to return it. The Tanya. Rabbi Nechemia, Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov, Putrim et amove, vet arev, mipneishin yesh behem kumvase. That the Rabbi Nechemia, Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov say that the malve and the arev are patur. Why? Because they have a kumase. So what does it mean that they are patur over here? We have a lav, right? And they have violated a lav. So when it comes to a violation of that lav, can you give them malchus, for instance, for violating this lav? So what? That depends on what type of lav it is. If it's a regular lav, right, then you could give them a malchus. If it's a lav anitak le'asei, lav anitak le'asei means that there's an assay to rectify what has been violated by the lav. We have a lav anitak le'asei, there's a general principle, that lav anitak le'asei ain't lokina lav. You do not get malchus for such a lav. So Gemara says over here, Rabbi Nechemia, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, putrim et ha-malveh v'tarei b'fnei she'esh ba'kumaseh. They make the malveh and the arei patur because there's a kumaseh. Gemara says, my kumaseh. What kumaseh are we speaking about over here? Lav yishuk darinu lehu, kumu hadru. What is it? The kumaseh is return the rebit. So even though you violate the sur of, the sur of taking rebit, which is, I don't, lo tikach niton neshek v'tarbit, nevertheless, there's still a responsibility by the malvet to return the money. And by returning the money, he can rectify the problem or the lav that he did, which is taking rebit inappropriately. Same thing with the arev, with the guarantor. If he allowed, or he was the one who took the rebit or paid the rebit on behalf of the malvet, same thing could happen there. So Mar says, Ichlal. From that we can apply the Tanakama Savar Lapnei Adurinehu, that the Tanakama, meaning that the Tanakama of Rabbi Nechemia Elizabeth and Yaakov disagrees with their position and believes that they are not returnable. It's not returnable. Kama Savar Lapnei Adurinehu.
What
verse is Tanakama? It was in the verse. The Gemara here didn't quote those that believe or say that they all violate the essay. And then Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, Rabbi Nechemia, Potrin et Malveh, and Arev, which is a response to someone who is Mechayev all of them. Right, so I think that's the explanation here. Right. Now the Gemara says, based on that, we have a Machlokas Tanaim po. A Machlokas Tanaim is whether there is a Kumbase, whether there's an ability to return the rebit that one has taken inappropriately, and therefore rectify the lav that they violated. So this machlokas will revolve around exactly this case, whether there is an obligation to return or whether there is an ability to return rebits. Right? The Tanakhama believes no, that you cannot return it, therefore you violate the law because there's no kumbase. Or so Lezer ben Yaakov and Rebbe Nechemia say no, that since you can return it, that's a kumbase. Kumbase is give back the rebit because that will rectify the situation. Or it says, look, my kumbase here, what's the kumbase here? The kroa shtoro. To rip up the shtar, which contains within it the loan with interest. It says, Micah Savar, what are you thinking now? Ika Savar, shtar omei legavod kegavui dami. If you think that a shtar is considered as if it's been already collected, because we have the shtar generates ishibud on the karka of the loveh. Since it generates a shibud on the karka of the loveh, it's as if he's already collected that which is found inside the shtar, then Rav da Yisurayu. Then they already violated the Isur. I mean, by the definition of having a shtar with rebit in it, then if that's kigavui dami, if it's considered as if it's collected, then the violation already took place because he already collected the interest. If you suggest that a shtar is not as if collected, what has he done so far? They wrote a shtar with rebate in it. They haven't done anything wrong. He hasn't collected the rebate yet. He hasn't collected the rebate. There's no violation. So what violation are we talking about over here that you need a kumbh asek? They're saying rectify the situation by ripping up the shtar. What are you rectifying? If you think, right, that the shtar is kigavu dami, then you're back to stage one, which is they violated the Easter of rebate, and now you're telling them to return the rebate. Rip up the shtar, right? To rip up the shtar. They already did the Easter. Ripping up the shtar now is not going to do anything for you. They violated the Easter of rebate, then we're dealing with the Easter of rebate. We're not dealing with the shtar. The shtar is not meaningful anymore. If you say they haven't collected on the shtar, what have they done wrong? They haven't collected rebate. The Easter is to take rebate from the Lovet. The Easter is not to write the shtar that has rebate in it. So now, I have not the explanation of
the text. My focus between Zmiyakov and Ramachami and Tanakhama.
That what?
That they hold that the shtar is what it was Lashon only the was kibbutz kigavui, and therefore the existence of the shtar already makes them chayim.
Right.
And Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Chaim hold them.
Okay, but then why would it only be true of the Malveh and the Arev? Why isn't the Lovet protected if you hold no? The Lovet didn't do anything wrong either. I mean, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and Rabbi Chaim only say that the Malveh and the Arev were off the hook. But they say the Loveh still violated the Isur. The way you're explaining it, the Loveh is not violating the Isur either. Because there was no milveh, there was no rebate paid over here. There's nothing that happened. So that can't be the explanation. So where is it? Lolam Kasavar Shtar made the Gabot, Lav Kikavut Dami. That everybody holds that Shtar, who made the Gabot, is Lav Kikavut Dami. It's not considered as if it's collected. Because Mashvalon, right, the Summa Milsehi. And so that's Gedalia. Thank you. The Tsuma means lasim is to impose from the pasuk in Mishpatim, which is lo tesimun olav neshech. Right. So the sim here is the imposition. That imposition of the loan or creation of the loan itself is a problem in rebate. Not simply paying rebate, but even creation of the loan is enough to generate the violation of the isur. Achanami mistavra. That makes sense. It's not a mission. Elo vim belo taseh. Amal bevalove barev vaidim. In all of the situations we can create in Maaseh where they're actively involved in the loan process, which means giving money or paying money or receiving money, they could be actively involved. But Eladim, my Ovid, how could you have an activity that is done by the Eladim? The Eladim are simply bystanders. All they're doing is watching what took place. If they're watching what took place, how could they be in violation of Allah? Elav, Shmamina, Tsuma Milsehi. That again, that the establishment of the loan, enabling such a loan to be established, is enough. Right, to create or to be in violation of the law of Lotisimun. If that's the case, when we know there that Machlokas Tanaim over here is about whether you have to actively, right, create a loan and then collect the interest or give the interest to be in violation of the sort, or the simple creation of the loan is enough to be in violation of the Isur. And from the moment that you create the loan, right, then you are already in violation of the Isur. And now she says, V'altar Mechemia Revelazel Meimar, T'lot Simun Alav Neshech, T'kamar Rachmana, Lav Asuma Greta Takapit, El Asuma Abalite Gibui. Right, it's only Asuma that ends up being collected. V'chol Kama Shalom Gavu, Ika Kuma Selikra Ishtara. As long as there's no collection of the actual money, then there's a reason to erupt the shtara. That Rashi says that the Tanakhama believes that everybody's in violation of the Isur, believes that the creation of the loan is the violation. And by the creation of the loan is the violation, then you can't rectify. You're over the Isur from the moment that it's created. On the other hand, Rabbi Nechemi and Rabbi Lezer and Yaakov believe that the Isur is only generated kigavui when you collect the actual loan. And so how do you prevent collection of the loan? You rip up the shtar. So therefore, since you still, as long as you've only generated an obligation so far, or been imposed an obligation so far, the imposition of the obligation, since that does not violate the Isur, right, then the ripping up of the shtar, right, is able to rectify the problem that was created, which is the collection. And since the collection won't take place if you rip up the shtar, that is a good rectification. Now that helps out Rabbi Yochanan now, because Rabbi Yochanan only said that if you pay rebate, right, then you don't have to return it. So now, when we're talking about kumba se over here, of Rav Lezman Yaakov and Rav Nechemia, they're not actively, but we're not telling them return rebit. We're saying to them is prevent the ability to have rebit be paid. And that's what the kar shtara over here is. Rip up the shtara in order to prevent that, we will come to a position where there will be gavui dami, where it will be collected.
Rav Nechemia and Rav Lezman Yaakov would say that if when it comes to what the service is collected, then you are over the Isser from the time of composing it, because otherwise you have the same problem with the Eidah.
Right.
And what did the Eidah
do? Right.
It's
fine. I think you have to say that with Rav Ozer and Rav Nechemya, that the violation will be the mafreya from the time that you are alone, once it's gavui, once it's been collected.
Gavui, then from that.
Right. Right. I think that's true. Tosfos here disagrees with Rashi a little bit. Rashi says that the Isur comes from a derivative. The Isur is Loti Simuna Lav Neshech. Tosfos says, no, that in the beginning they really thought the Lav was Altikach Mito Neshech. That they were using the puzzle Altikach Mito Neshech. And that they were arguing in Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. That was the original Havamina of the Gemara. As we say, Loti Simuna Lav Neshech is the Isur, then what's the Machlokis? Loti Simuna Lav is basically, right, Sima, the imposition automatically is the Lav. And then what are they arguing about? So it has to be that they were arguing originally, or what we thought the Gemara's argument was, Altikach Mito Neshech, and they were arguing in Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar whether there's an obligation to return or not to return it. The Gemara then only later on moves, right? And then the Gemara, then the issue would be, Lav Nitak Lasei or Lo Nitak Lasei, which would be the same Machlokis basically what Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar have. Right? Then otherwise, later on, the Gemara says, no. Don't say that they're arguing about the Lav Altikach Mito Neshech, but rather, they're arguing about the lava of Lotus Simun. That's the change in the Gemara. The Gemara is actually moving about what Isur, what lava they are speaking about. Plus, Rashi thinks the whole thing is about the lava of Lotus Simun. Right? Those things, there was actually two different lavim that they were talking about. And that's the shift over here. The shift in the Gemara is switching from the lava of Altikach to the lava of Lotus Simun. And that shift is what changes it from a lava Nitak Lase to talking about whether the lava is imposed from the moment of the Sima, from the moment of the placement or the creation of the obligation, that creation of the Summa, or, right, does the Rabbi Chemel Ezer believe that the Summa milsa talia of the Kaish, Yimikra Ashtar, called Mishikah Patur? So that's exactly what you were saying, and the Tosfos explicitly spells it out, which is, both of them agree that there's a lav alot simun. Lav alot simun, the question is, when do you violate the lav alot simun? According to the Tanagam, you violate the lav alot simun from the moment that the obligation is created, and the Rabbi Ezer Yaakov, Rabbi Chemel, believe no. A violation is only once it's gavui. Once they've collected it, that's the completion of the obligation that was created. Without that completion, that won't happen. So if you rip up the shtar, you can prevent yourself from ever ending up in such a position of a lav. Okay? All right, now. Bishlama. Oh, wait, no, there. Amar Rav Safra. Kol she'ilu b'dinehem motzi'in milovel malveh b'dineinu machzirin mimalveh l'loveh. So in the courts, in the non-Jewish courts, anything that they would obligate a lover to pay, if such agreement existed between a debtor and a creditor, they would force the debtor to pay. In those cases, we would force the creditor to give it back. Okay? That's the one statement. Anything in their dinim, where they would not obligate the debtor to pay the creditor, then we wouldn't obligate or the malveh, the creditor, to return that money to the loveh. So Gemara says, I'm only a buyer of Yosef, we follow who? Is this such a good principle? Is this principle so good? So now one side of the principle we can explain very easily. And I'll tell you that's what's called Ribit Tutsa. One who charges interest, right? One who charges absolute interest. Say, I'll give you 4, you give me back 5. That's called Ribit Tutsa. In courts, in the non-Jewish courts, that's a extractable payment. Because if you have an agreement to pay 5 for 4, you go to court, they will say, pay up 5, they'll force the loveh to pay. And ardineinu, what would that mean? That you've got to, right, you got to send back that money. You got to give that money back, because we'll force the loveh to return their money, that's ribit tzutza. Right, that would be explained. The second half of this price is not so clear. Now, Rabbi Yosef, we're going to have different questions about this. So I'm really a byler of Yosef. Kolo, is your principle such a foolproof principle? All right, saw b'saw. What happens if you loan sa'ab sa'ab? You loan for like for like. So divi dinam motzim milove lemalve. Over there, in their case, they will extract such monies. Meaning that if you lend him a kur of wheat, and he must then pay you back a kur of wheat, there in the dinim of the non-Jewish courts, they would say to the loave and force him to pay up a kur of chitin. But nevertheless, we know from our dinim that that's only a violation of ribit mitirabanan, right? Because it's sa'a b'sa'a, which is not literally ribit, but it's actually mechzik ribit. It only looks like ribit because even though you're giving him the same item that he lent to you, nevertheless, the price, the market price of the item has changed. Since the market price of the item has changed, it looks like he borrowed 100 from you and now he's paying you back 120. So because they have nefesh, they can rebuke. We say don't do hareisa b'sa'a b'sa'a. That's only an imposition to meet the Rabbanan. If it's an imposition to meet the Rabbanan, both Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan agree that we don't extract that from the malveh. So now you have a case where in their courts you would obligate the malveh to pay. Nevertheless, in our dinim, we don't obligate the malveh to return such an item. So he says, how can you say that? Samalei, inu b'tarak pikadon atal yadei. He says, wait, you have to know how they view such a situation. They don't view such a situation as a loan. Right? It's not that it's a loan, but rather it's considered to be a pikadon. When you give him a kor chitim, right, basically what you're saying is, my kor chitim is now resting with you. I could have kept it in my house, but you're doing me a favor and you're keeping my kor chitim for me. So when they obligate the lovet, the quote-unquote lovet here, but the debtor to return it, they're not obligating him because they think there was a loan. They're obligating to pay it back. They're obligating because they really think he's like a shomer, that he's watching this other person's property, and now they're obligating to give back this other person's property. So the obligation here is not mitzad halva'a, mitzad loan, and that's why they're forcing him to give it back. True, if it had been because of the loan, then dinenu, we should have had a parallel structure. But here, because the issue is not classified as a loan in their dinim, my statement or my principle does not apply over here. The application of my principle is not here. Right. It is din about comparing their dinim to our dinim. It's not applicable here because they look at it as not a loan, but rather as a pikadon. Say, Amar Lei Ravina Ravashi. So again, we're going to have more and more questions about this principle. So we're going to come up with cases where we have a different din. What is that? Right, mashkanta below nechaita. It's a case of a mashkom below nechaita b'dinam motziim milovel malveh. In their dinim, they will extract this from the debtor. B'dinenu ein machzirim milovel loveh. In our dinim, we don't force the malveh to give it back to loveh. So what is mashkanta below nechaita? Mashkanta below nechaita is an agreement by where it's one, a person lends money, and then he's given a, for instance, a kerem or a pardes as a mashkom. Now, while he has this mashkom, this property as a mashkom, there are fruits or there's produce that comes out of the land. He eats, the malveh eats the produce on that land. When he eats the produce on that land, it's below nechaita. He does not reduce the loan. He does not reduce the principal of the loan. Meaning that you could have had a case, b'nechaita, which is that he reduces every time he eats fruits, that he deducts from the principal of the loan because he's actually getting money from the loan. This is a case with low nechaita. Low nechaita is that he's not reducing the value of the loan. The loan remains intact, and he, in the meantime, is eating the fruits. That looks like interest, basically. He lends him money, and in the interim, he's able to eat the fruit of such a kerem or such a pardes. Right? Because of that, he's basically, in the end, he gets back his money full, and plus in the interim, he ate all his fruit. Looks like to me like interest. And their dinim, if you made such an agreement, they would say to the loveh, you got to give him the fruits. If you keep the fruits are his, they would extract it from the loveh and give it to the malveh. But with dinenu, in our dinim, we do not force him to return it. Why not? Why not in our dinim, in our first to return it? Rashi says it's not ribi ketuta. Why is it not ribi ketuta? This is the top Rashi over here. Dinenu imakzirim davak ribitu. It's not absolute rebate, but rather a vak rebate. Why? Came into zimnin, sheno sim perot. There's sometimes where it just doesn't produce. The fields don't produce. Shokamim lo came into rebate ketuta. Rebate ketuta has to be a situation where there is no downside, and it will happen for sure. That's the definition of rebate ketuta is that it will happen no matter what. I mean,
it's predetermined.
Right. Well, not, it doesn't have to be here. Here doesn't have to be. It doesn't necessarily have to be a predetermined amount, but it has to be an amount where for sure, certain you will receive only the upside, no downside, and number two is that you're certain you will get this upside. Okay, so those are the two qualifications of Rebbe Tzutza. Here it fails on one of them, which is that we're not certain that you will get the output of the property because the property may not have output. I mean, according to what you're saying is that there's no determined output. That's not, Rashi doesn't say that. It's not that it fluctuates. Because even if it fluctuates, it's upside, always upside to you. That would already be Rebbe Tzutza. The problem here is that it could be an ephes. It could be a zero. If it's a zero, then you don't get rebit. That's not classified as rebit ketuta. So if that's the case, right, why is it we don't have this parallel anymore that Rav Safra set up? They don't view the transaction, again, as a loan transaction with a mashkom. How do they view this transaction? They view this transaction as a purchase with an option to buy back. So what's the malveh? The lender over here, what is he doing? He's handing money to the loveh. When he hands money to the loveh, he gives him the mashkom, he gives him the property. The way they view it in their dinim is not that there was a loan here, and now there's a mashkom, but rather, the malveh gave money and purchased this land. This land now belongs to him. Belongs to him so he can eat the fruits that are on his land. Ah, but the loveh has an ability to take the land back, because, quote unquote, it really is a mashkom, but that is a buyback option. That's what they classified as a buyback option, not as a loan with the mashkon, rather a purchase with a buyback option. A purchase with a buyback option tells me that whenever I have the property, I own it entirely. When he buys it back, then it becomes his again. So that's how they look at it. If they look at it, then it's not, again, not in the category of loans, and therefore the principle of Safra would not be relevant anymore. Right now, so the Gemara wants to know, okay, if this is Ela Kol She'ilu B'nei'ehem, this principle that he establishes, the Kamar of Safra, my Atalei Shmi'inan. What is he coming to teach us? I mean, okay, fine, so these cases are not cases that uproot his position, but what din, or what type of information is Safra giving us that we didn't have before? So Hachi Atalei Shmi'inan, this is what he's coming to teach us. Kol She'inu D'nei'ehem, Mutzin milovel malve, in their dinim, when they extract it from the debtor and give it to the creditor, dinim machzirim milovel malve. That when we, in our cases, we'll force the malve to give it back. Umayninu, what's that case? That case is be rebit ktutza, in absolute rebit, meaning rebit deoraisa. And what is he teaching us? Uke Rabbi Elazar, the din's like Rabbi Elazar, because this is exactly the machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan argue about whether there is a obligation to return, or an ability really to return, to rectify a situation through the return of rebit. And therefore, Rav Safra's statement says, basically, that in a case where they will extract it in their dinim from the debtor to the creditor, in our dinim we will force the malveh, or obligate the malveh to return the rebit. We obligate the malveh to return rebit. Who is that? That is Rabbi Elazar. That's exactly what Rav Elazar, that's what Rav Safra is coming to teach us, that the din's like Rav Elazar. So what about the second half of his statement? Kol shilu b'dinehem, in motzim b'dinenu. What about the others? B'dinehem, in motzim, in... I'm sorry. Kol shilu b'dinehem, in motzim, anything in their dinim that we would not extract, b'dinenu, in machzirin. Right? In our dinim, we do not return. That, the Gemara is coming to explain something called ribit mukdemet and ribit mi'ucheret.
Those refer to payments that are outside the framework of the loan, either before the loan took place or after the loan was already paid back. So in those two instances, those payments look like interest because the person may have given me a gift up front to get the loan or to get the money from him. And the other way around, if he's already repaid the money, he might give him a gift in addition after the loan's already been closed out, which is also looks like interest. So because it's not in the framework of the loan, it's not a part of the loan, in dinehem, in their dinehem, they will not extract it. They will not force you to pay it because it wasn't in the contract, wasn't in the loan. So if that's the case, in our dinehem, we also will not be obligated to give it back to the Achziritzeh, because just like in their dinim, they don't extract it, in our dinim, we don't force them to give it back, again, because it's also mechzik ribit, it looks like ribit, it's not actually ribit, but it looks like an avak ribit, and that's only ribit to Barabanan, and in that instance, we don't force you to give it back.
Right, so again, in the Gemara, we're going to come up to it, it's a sugya that comes up in the Mishnayot that are coming up, that we'll discuss it in those Mishnayot. So now, we had in our Mishnah two different cases. We had a case of Ezu Neshech. Ezu Neshech, whom our Mishnah described as being, as we concluded before, Rebit Ktutza. That's Rebit Midoraita. Then we had the second half of the Mishnah, which says Ezu Tarbit, creates a Rebit, which is a Mak Rebit, a Rebit Terabanan. Gemara now wants to know, what exactly is the problem here? What is the case over here? Now, V'chi Ein Lo Yayin, Mai Havi. So just because he doesn't have wine, what is the problem? Va'atanyo, we have a brisa in general, in poskin al peirot, it's a yitzir ashar. That until the market price for an object or a peirot or produce has been determined, we don't allow you to establish a commitment, one person to the other, about providing. A supplier cannot guarantee supply until the market price is out. Right? But mishyatzir ashar, poskim al peishen, laseh, yesh laseh. That once the market price is out there, one is allowed to guarantee supply. Why is one allowed to guarantee supply? Because even though if you don't have it today, right, so when you say, oh, if you don't have it today, this becomes a problem of sal v'sal. Say no. Why? Because the market price is readily available, and the produce is readily available in the shuk. You can take your money and go buy the equivalent of that sa'ah of wheat, or whatever that is, produce that you transact with today in the market at that price. So that's the equivalent of you having the item in hand, right? If you have the item in hand, or you can purchase the item at that price today in the market, right? That is enough to say that you're allowed to guarantee supply. So that's what Gemara wants to know over here. I don't understand what the problem is. If the shire is already out, if the market price has already been determined, why do we care whether he has wine or he doesn't have wine? Having wine or doesn't have wine is irrelevant once the market price is out, because then everybody is considered equal. Even if you don't have it, you can purchase it in the market, and therefore, you consider as if to have it. The other hand, if it's before the market price comes out, We don't care if you have wine or you don't have wine. You're not allowed to lend. You're not allowed to guarantee supply, even if you have wine in your hand. So then, why does the Mishnah distinguish between him having wine and not having wine? Why should that be relevant to the case? So Amar Rabba Masnisin Biba B'chol B'dmehem Maskinan. Our Mishnah is a case where he's trying to become, right, obligate him in the monetary amounts. So what does that mean? Uchidatanya, like we have a brisa. Hareshiyat Nashit B'chavero Maneh. Person is, right, a creditor to an individual for 100. Balach Mamad Al Gorno comes to his Goren and says, Omer, Tain Li Ma'utai. He says, give me my money. Shani Wotzelikach Lehem Chitim. I'm ready. I need to buy wheat now. I want my money back that I lent you. So give me my money so I can go out and buy wheat. Amar lo chitim yeshli. I have wheat. Shani no tein lecha, and I will give that to you. Say vase alai kishar shalach shav. Ve'ani alei lecha kol hashneim asar chodesh. So he says, listen, I have wheat. You want to buy 100 maneh worth of wheat. And basically a supply for a whole year. He wants to buy a whole bunch of wheat. He says, listen, you go out, find out what the market price is today. Whatever the market price is today, I will guarantee you that market price from today all the way through the next 12 months. For the next year, I will guarantee you such a market price. Right? Then the Gemara says, asur. Why? Delaki suro abali yado dami. It's not the equivalent of being able to purchase it out in the market. What did we say before? Before we said that if you have a sha'ar, you have a shuk price, out in the market, we say that you can borrow on that, or you can obligate yourself to return an item. If you borrow chitim, or you borrow money, you can give yourself back in chitim. Why? Because you can either take the monies and purchase it today at that price in the market, or if you have it, you can return it either way. But the object becomes fungible in the market because it's equivalent to money. It's money good because you can purchase it and exchange it for whatever you need. What this person here is doing
is instead of receiving cash or receiving the produce and then guaranteeing to return it, he's taking an already outstanding loan. This already outstanding loan, he's then now trying to transfer or convert into a repayment of produce. So what the Bryce is showing us is that there's actually a difference. There's a difference between when you are receiving the merchandise or you're receiving the money up front for the loan. In that instance, we say that as long as the market price is out there, we are fine. But in a case where you're taking an already outstanding loan, already existing loan, and then you are saying, let me convert that into produce, meaning that I owe you 100. Now, instead of giving you back the 100, I'm going to give you back the 100 in kind in wheat at a fixed price. Wait a minute. Now we have a problem. Why? Because the whole reason we allow you to do this normally by Sabasa is because you can go out into the market and buy it yourself with the money that you received. Or if you have the produce in hand, you're not exposing yourself to the market fluctuations. That's not true here, because the money that you are using to purchase the item is already a loan. It's already an existing loan. If that existing loan, the money's been used a long time ago. It doesn't exist right today. It doesn't exist right today. That means when you accept upon yourself to supply him, you don't have the ability now to go out into the market immediately and buy that wheat and replace it because you didn't receive any money in this loan. So that differentiation in the Braisa, which we see now from the Braisa, says that it's asur when you have an outstanding loan of maneh to set and fix a price with it. Rabba is saying that the distinction between when the money is present to when you are trying to convert a loan is the same issue that our Mishnah has. And why is that? Because the case in the Mishnah is an instance where he owed him money. I mean, he owed him money for the chitim, the mei chitim. He doesn't owe him wheat back, but rather he owes him the money or the value of the wheat that he had borrowed. Now, instead of, he says, listen, I have to give you that money. But instead of giving the money, he says, listen, I don't have the money today. Can instead of me paying you for that chitim that you gave me earlier on, I'm not going to pay you. I owe you this much money. Let's make it into a loan now. And when I make it into a loan, I'm not going to repay you in wheat. I'm going to repay you in yayin. So that's exactly like the Braisa suggests. This is a case where he has no money present. The loan's already there because he borrowed the chitim a while ago, and there is no cash, and there's no other merchandise available now. And he's saying, listen, I have a loan. I owe you money, you're right, and I can give it back to you as a loan. But I'm not going to repay you in money. I'm going to repay you in kind, in yayin. So that's exactly what the Braisa just said is asur. It's asur because you have no merchandise or money present where you can purchase it out in the open market. So now that'll make a difference between whether you have yayin or you don't have yayin. If you have yayin, right, then it's not a problem. Why? Because if you have a yayin present and that's what you're giving it to him, then the malveh, then the creditor acquires the yayin. It's as if he acquires it immediately. It becomes his yayin. And therefore, if the market price moves up on the yayin, we don't consider it like rebate, because it's as if it accrued the benefit or the appreciation happened while it was in possession of the malveh. On the other hand, if you don't have any yayin at this present time, then you've now exposed yourself to the market fluctuations of yayin, the wine, and the price could go up. If the price could go up, then that's going to look like mechzik ribit, but it's a case of mechzik ribit where you didn't upfront either have money or receive something that you could have purchased that wine in the open market. And since you didn't get anything, you just said, oh, I have an outstanding loan, I'm going to convert it into the payment of wine, that'll be considered or classified as being asur. Abaye then questions this explanation of Rabba of our Mishnah. Why? Because Abaye says, Amrei Abaye, Ita lo kisiro abali ado, if it's not a case where he actually receives cash up front or produce up front, which we said above in the Braisa, that if you have the produce or you have the cash in hand, then you can make any deal you want in terms of repayment in the future because you can go and purchase it out in the open market now. But in cases when it's not any surobliado, meaning that it's a conversion of a loan, right there we say that it's irrelevant whether you have it or don't have it, right? Because says, this distinction that Rabba that you're making between whether he has wine and doesn't have wine is not really true. Why? Because the Braisa we just brought down here about converting a loan of 100 of a manet into wheat, over there it's talking about a case where it's in his golen. He's in his golen, that means that he has plenty of wheat available to give to this individual. Even though he has wheat to give to this individual, when he's converting a loan into in-kind payment, that is asur, whether he has wheat or whether he doesn't have wheat. If there's no such distinction, then how can you explain that as being the reason that our Mishnah says that it's asur, right, when there is no wine, and that it's mutar when there is wine? Mutar and asur about having and not having the wine is irrelevant. If it's a conversion of a loan, there is a blanket rule. If a conversion of a loan, you may not convert into an in-kind payment. That is called avak ribit in all instances, whether you have it or whether you don't have it. So this distinction that you're going, Rabba, I don't really see. Abaye says,
hello, my Abaye. Abaye says, no. Masnisen kedetani Rav Safra beribit debe Rabbi Chiyah. Our mission is explained according to Rav Safra that explains in the ribit debe Rabbi Chiyah. The Tani Rav Safra ribit debe Rabbi Chiyah. Yesh terim shem butarim vasurim bifnei haramat ribit. There are certain things that are mutar and asur because of haramat ribit. It looks like you're playing games to get interest paid. Ketzad. Here's the case. Amalo Hilvani Maneh says, lend me a Maneh. Amalei Maneh. I don't have 100 zuz right now, 100 ma'ah right now. Chitim b'maneh yeshli. But I do have chitim worth 100. Sh'ani yotenecha, I'll give them to you. So not the way chitim, he gives them the chitim b'maneh. Basically says, here's your chitim, we're assessing the value at 100. But chazar, and now this person's desperate for cash, he didn't need wheat, he needed cash. So now when you lend him, when you sell him the chitim, basically you're selling him a chitim at 100, he says, I still need cash. So you go ahead and say, you know what, I'll buy those chitim off of you at 96. So he says, Amalei Yomani Maneh, Amalei Yomani Maneh, Chitim Maneh, Yishli, Shani, Notei Lecha, Natan Lo Chitim Maneh, Chazar Lechan Mimenu Be'esrim Ve'arba Sela. Goes and buy back. A Maneh is 25 Sela. So he takes a discount of 1 Sela, he takes a discount of 4%, gives him back 96 out of the 100. So 96, he pays him 9600 to buy it. So now over here, you have a case of Mecha Chomemkar. All this has been done as a transactional, right, situation. You bought Chitim for me at 100, and I'm buying the back for you at 96. Not because I'm changing, I'm charging you interest. I'm buying the back for you at 96 is because you don't want to wait to the Yom HaShuk. And I'm taking a discount because you're desperate for cash and you don't want to get to the Yom HaShuk. So my taking of that discount has nothing to do with Skaram Tanat Ma'ot. It has nothing to do with the money you owe me. It has to do with the fact that you're not patient enough to wait to the Yom HaShuk. If you wait to the Yom HaShuk, you could liquidate this at 100. If you wait to the Yom HaShuk, you could liquidate it at 100 and there would be no loss, there would be no Skaram Tanat Ma'ot. So when I take 96 today, I am doing you a favor that has nothing to do with the loan, it has simply to do with that I'm providing liquidity today before Yom HaShuk.
What is that in the money? I don't have money.
That means I don't want to lend you a money. Maybe. You have to say that, otherwise you have cash later to purchase
it. Right. He has at least 24 of the
25. Right. So he can say I'm 96, not 100. Right. In the end, he only ends up with 96, so you may as well give him 96. Right. I agree with you. That has to be the explanation. In all these cases, it's mutar, but so the suk came in pnei harama to repeat. Even though it's mutar, such a transaction is mutar because it's all transactional and not borrowing. Nevertheless, we say don't do it because it looks like you're cheating to get the interest. Basically, you're getting interest through a backhanded way. You're creating transactions to get the remedy. Hachanami, you go to Armadar, he'll finish Loshim Terenarim. As we explain the Mishnah, our Mishnah. Haven't seen a machlok between Rashi and Tosfot over here, what the problem is. Rashi said the only problem here is the Yayin, which is when we discussed the Mishnah, I mentioned that. The fact that in the end of the Mishnah, he's willing to give Yayin even though he doesn't have it. Tosu says that the entire Mishnah, the entire section of the Mishnah is a problem. Whether it's Kitim in the beginning where he offers wheat, or in the end where he offers the wine, if he doesn't have it, it's always a problem. Okay, so that's Tosu's reading of it. Rashi reads it as simply being a problem for the Yain. Lend me 30 dinarim. Amalei, 30 dinarim mainly. I don't have 30 dinarim. Chitim is 30 dinarim initially, but I do have Kitim at 30 dinar. So he says, okay. He hands him the chitim for 30. And then he goes and buys him back with a dinar zav, which is really 25 dinarim. So he's buying back from him, right? A discount. Now, if he chamra lelove, peruhu dekashak u'minei leislam ba. So therefore, if the love, the borrower himself, has wine at that moment in time, then we don't worry about it. Why?
Because in the beginning, what the transaction really is over here is that he is lending you 25 dinarai kesef. In the end, you're going to have to pay back 30 dinarai kesef. So now, when you borrow the 25 dinarai kesef and you end up paying him back 30 dinarai kesef in kind with wine, in that instance, it's okay. Why? Because it doesn't look like mechzik ribit. Over there, it's not like the halamat ribit which we spoke about before, because it's almost like an apples and oranges transaction. You borrowed cash, and then you're paying back wine. So you don't really see that clear differential of the 25 to the 30. On the other hand, if you do not have wine, then it really looks like a transaction that involves Shechar Hamtanat Ma'ot. Why? Because he lent you 25 up front through this convoluted transaction of giving you the produce at 30, which you then made into an outstanding loan, and then you selling back the produce to him at 25, but now you accept on yourself to pay that 30 back, that loan that you have at 30, you're accepting to pay it in wine. So if you have the wine, and you pay it back in wine, then you borrowed money, give back in wine, doesn't look like a Ramat Rebit, doesn't look like Mexican Rebit. On the other hand, if you have the 25 dinarai kesef in your hand, and then in the end, you don't have wine, and therefore you're going to give him 30 dinarai kesef back in the end, that looks like you borrowed 25 and you're paying him back 30. That is asur because it's repaying a Ramat Rebit.
Because, says then, Amalei Ravo Yochi, Tain Li Chiti. Why does it say Tain Li Chiti? It should say, tell me, Dmei Chiti mi Baile. He's not asking him back for his wheat that he lent him. He's asking him back for his money. The way Abayi's Hefsh is that there's a pre-existing loan that he's fulfilling with wine. He's not saying, fulfill, I lent you wheat, give me my wheat back. He's saying, give me my money back. And then he says, oh, I'll give you wine instead. I'll pay you in wine instead. But there's no money. It says Chitim in the Mishnah. It says, Tnei Dmei Chiti. Change the Mishnah to write, not Chiti, but Dmei Chiti. Shani Mochran. He says, I want to sell my Chitim to liquidate them to get money. He says, why does he have to sell them? He lent them money now. So he says, it should say, Shemachartim lecha mi baile. Said that I already sold to you. I mean, that I sold you this wheat already, give me that back. I mean, give me the value back, or give me back the wheat at that value. He's not telling him I'm going to sell it, because he didn't sell it. There's a monetary obligation here. So it says, hey, Shemachartim lecha. I meant the Mishnah to be Mechartim lecha. But it says, V'arei chitecha su'at alayv shlashim dinarim. Our Mishnah explicitly says that. He says, the chitim that I owe you now, I will obligate myself to pay you those 30 dinarim. So he says, what do you mean? That was the original obligation to him. What do you mean now I'm going to take on the obligation of the wheat? The wheat obligation happened from the beginning of the transaction. That's when he handed him wheat and became obligated in 30 dinar right then. He was obligated in repaying him. He sold him the wheat for 30 up front. So why is he saying over here, oh, the wheat that I owe you now.
He sold him the wheat for the equivalent.
Of 30 dinar, right? 30 dinar, because he didn't have the money to pay him at that time, right? So that became the loan. So he says, wait. He says, it's harei chitecha su'at alayv shlashim dinarim. Yikari nami hachi ukim nu alayu. What do you mean, now? Now? Meaning that was the beginning of the transaction. The transaction has never changed. The price that we're talking about here hasn't changed. Now I'm taking on the dinar zaha. I'm taking on the 30 dinarim. He already took on the 30 dinarim from the beginning of the transaction. Read the Mishnah. No. Those chitim that I originally took from you, that I now owe you 30 dinarei kesef for, that original transaction, I'm asking you now to transfer that obligation onto the wine. And he doesn't have wine. The Gemara says, v'hab dinar zahav akur. Right? So he says, v'chein ashar tani. Says that it's the dinar zav, it's 25, and that is the market price. So when he says, Rashi says, what does that mean? If what you're saying is true, Abaye, What are you talking about? When he bought it for a dinar zahav, the shahr was not 25, it was 30. According to Abaye, the whole thing is that you bought it for 30 all the way along here. Right? So if I hide the ozu gape, and then when it went down in value, then it went down via shahr, but dinar zahav. Bezeh alam enav. Alav shloshim dinar mikara ukim nu beribit bishvil hamtanato. If you say that the original shahr was 25, and he's giving it to him for 30, that means that he's charging a repeat up front. So how can you say, according to Abaye, it was supposed to the shahr was 30 up front. So how can you say now that he bought it for 30 up front? According to Abaye, it's explaining the whole transaction is about 30. And that transaction happened up front, which is that I gave you chitim up front that were worth 30, and you said I'll pay you the 30 back later on, right? That was the whole transaction. But then the Mishnah goes ahead and says that the market price is 25. What do you mean the market price? Okay, the shahr is, if the market price is 25 and I'm telling you 30, that means I'm charging you interest right up front. Five, and I'm charging you 30, that means we built in interest into the loan right up front. That's a problem. That can't be the issue. All right, we're going to stop here because Robert gives a new solution that goes on tomorrow. We'll stop over here. If there's questions, I'm by it.